If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at BestWestern.com.
Bowtech Archery prides themselves on offering a bow for everyone. Whether you have a short draw length, a long draw length, pull 70 pounds or 40 pounds, you're a bow hunter or a target archer, they offer a bow that can be customized to fit your body type. On top of that, their deadlock technology allows you to fine-tune your arrow flight. Visit bowtecharchery.com and check out the SR350 and the CP28. Bowtech Archery, refuse to follow. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today is a real quick, real short, 30-minute-ish BS session with the DIY sportsman, Garrett Prawl, about knowing when to replace your hunting gear and equipment. And we talk about everything from boots and clothing to bowstrings and a whole bunch of other items that we all use in any given season. And so we always talk about the latest, greatest things, but often enough, we don't talk about the reality of all this stuff, and is that we all can't afford brand new hunting gear every single season. So we got to learn how to take care of it. We talk about repairing, replacing. We talk about patching up stuff in their clothing, learning how to use a sewing machine, that kind of stuff. And so it's a really good episode. I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy it. And plus, if you don't know who Garrett is, he is the host of the DIY Sportsman podcast here on the Sportsman's Empire podcast network. And he's a wealth of knowledge. So make sure you go and listen to his podcast as well. And before we get into that, though, we got to do some commercials. If you're looking for a saddle, you need to go check out Tethered. Not only do they have badass equipment, right? I've been playing around with their platform, their saddle, and I'm a big guy, so I went with the extra large stuff. I went with their XL saddle and their XL platform. I have some climbing sticks from them as well. And not only is their products grade A, but they have a wealth of knowledge on their website and on their YouTube channel that helps educate people how to get more comfortable with the equipment that they sell. And that's a big bonus. So go check out Tethered if you're looking to get into saddle hunting. Hunt Stand, again and again, man, I keep referring to this platform, this hunting app that is just has a wealth of knowledge behind it. It has so much functionality. It has the ability to check landowners, satellite imagery. There's like 7 or 8 different mapping base layers that you can choose from. On top of that, it has the you know, you can drop your pins and journal and document everything that you find, but it goes deeper than that. It allows you to journal in those and leave notes and share pictures and trail camera photos and organize them in there. I mean, you need, in order to get the gist of what Hunt Stand is, you need to go to huntstand.com, check it out, discount code for 20% off, SN20, and you can download it for free. And if you want to upgrade, use the discount code SN20. And lastly, Annihilator Broadheads. I just had these guys on the podcast, the episode before this one. So if you want to go learn about their broadhead and how deadly it is, you need to go check out the previous podcast with Annihilator Broadheads. And if you want to find more about the company and their unique design and how it the design allows for larger wound channels and more pass-throughs through the game that they're trying to that you're trying to hunt, go check out the Annihilator Broadheads website. Other than that, let's get into today's topic, and that's knowing when to replace or upgrade or fix your hunting gear and equipment with Garrett Peral, the DIY Sportsman. Hopefully you guys enjoy. 3, 2, 1. All right. On the podcast with me today is the DIY Sportsman, Garrett Peral. Garrett, what's up, man?
Hey, Dan, how's it going?
It's going good. How's the season looking so far? If you were gonna take a look at everything that you know going into the season, how you feel about it? How's it looking?
I would say 7.5 to 8 out of 10.
Really? That's high.
Yeah.
What about it?
I've built up enough history in the place that I'm mostly going to be hunting that I have a lot of confidence for how the deer use it various times of the year. And I had, I think, $5 over several thousand acres that I was really looking to see and hoping they'd make it through the firearm season and make it to this year. And I've already got confirmation of 2 of those bucks.
Oh, nice.
And I imagine that I know a couple of the other ones have gotten photos after the rifle season. So I imagine they're around. I just haven't gotten photos of them. Most of my cameras are in scrape spots. I expect to get good in October.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Things are looking up so far.
That's good. I tell you what, it's good to have that kind of confidence going into a season. Myself, dude, I only have 1 shooter buck on camera only 1 time this year so far. And that's a cell cam. And I got 4 cell cams out and over 800 acres about. And it's just, I don't know, man. I'm hoping that September shift swings in my favor this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be, you know, the crops or whatever.
Yeah.
I seem to always struggle this time of year getting consistent pictures of good deer. Yeah. I'll get like that one random one every 2 weeks. They're just kind of like doing that little excursion in the July, August timeframe through the rut range. But
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you got for states this year? You, Minnesota, Wisconsin, anything else?
Yeah, I'll do North Dakota for the opener again. And
oh, nice.
If I don't tag out, I'll probably go back sometime in November or December.
But nice.
Trying to keep it a little bit more confined this year than I have last year.
Yeah. Why is that?
It just gets spread too thin.
Yeah.
I remember last year, I even did like the Iowa late season tag again. And I just remember thinking, you know, I was struggling and you know, putting in miles, trying to make it happen, and it just wasn't really clicking. Most of the deer I was finding were spending a lot of time on private.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, I could be just, you know, pounding some of my land that I know really well back up in Minnesota and Wisconsin and probably doing better than I am right now.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, trying to fill too many tags in one season.
Yeah. That's the game, right? I mean, you hear these stories about guys going out and getting it done in, man, I don't know, like 5 states in 1 year, right? And the most I've hunted in 1 year is 3. And so I don't know, man. I'm trying to play that game as well and trying to figure out what the limits are and see, you know, because if one hunt goes terribly wrong and you don't tag out and you use all however many days you've allocated to that hunt,
yep,
the next hunt, you can either cut it short if it's bad, then the next hunt, or you want to stretch it out, or I don't know. It just, that game is hard to play.
Yeah, it's very hard. And it depends a lot on what your goals are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fact. Well, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and this topic kind of popped up the other day. I'm in the market for a new pair of boots, and I'm probably just going to go and buy the same pair that I've been using for the past 4 years. And I'm trying to figure out, like, how long do I let equipment go until I replace it, or upgrade it or fix it or anything like that. And so first question right off to you, is very high level question, is how often do you replace your hunting equipment?
I'd say more often than I did when I was younger.
Yeah.
But I usually push it about to the point where it's getting kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, multiple holes in pants,
yeah,
or like boots if they're leaking, or like leather boots if the soles, you know, starting to fall off. If stuff gets to that point, that's usually when I'm like, okay, I'll just get a new one. If it's something I like, I'll get the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever done any type of repair, like sole of the boots, replace them, or re-waterproof a pair of boots?
I've done, especially on leather boots in the past, I've done the little silicone treatments to try and give them some additional waterproofing if they're Gore-Tex or something like that. But it usually seems like once it starts to go, it's pretty constant upkeep to try and get them back to the point where they're actually working again.
Yeah.
That's been kind of my experience with it.
Yeah. That's the same thing that I did this year. I decided to put them out one more year. And luckily, when I wear these boots, it's not, I don't have to go through a lot of moisture per se, unless it's like raining or things like that. But I re-waterproofed my boots. You know, I scrubbed them down real hard, got them nice and dry, and then I did the spray-on silicone over top of all of it and let it absorb in. And I don't think it worked like I wanted it to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's usually what you're experiencing is usually about the point where I just say, you know, forget it. I'll just go buy another pair.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I did this year. I ended up, like, I'm going to probably in the next week or so, I'm going to be buying a new pair of boots and getting them broke in before the season starts. Now, what about other equipment? Me and you are both bow hunters, right? How often, you know, there's this fine line that a lot of bow hunters go through, and it's, I like bow hunting, so I want to get the latest and greatest bow, versus the guys out there who are like, dude, I've been shooting the same bow for 17 years or whatever. When it comes to mechanical equipment, like a bow or broadheads or arrows or things like that, how often are you messing around with those?
I'd say I more often change if I'm looking to experiment with different things than out of necessity.
Yeah.
I think with most of my, you know, machined or mechanical type of equipment, like I hunted with a Bowtech for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And when I got rid of it, I didn't really need to replace it. I could have kept using it, but I just wanted to try something different.
Yeah.
And whether it's, you know, broadheads or something that's archery related, you know, like when I hunted out of a tree stand more, I used the same tree stand for, gosh, I think I bought that thing 16 years ago at this point. So some things that just literally don't need to be replaced if they're made well. Yeah. If anything, it's like the, you know, more wearable parts of it, you know, like strings and cables on a bow would be an example.
Yeah. Things that wear and obviously need replaced.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like when you had that bow tech for however many years, how many years did you go on a set of strings?
I think I've replaced them about every 2 years.
Every two? Yeah. Yeah. I think so. This year I decided not to upgrade my bow. And part of it was because I was shooting really good with it last year. And so when I, you know, I'm guilty for not being that guy who goes out and shoots all year round, right? I'm unfortunately not that guy. But when I picked it up this year and shot it, I started shooting consistent again right away. Now I need to do some fine tuning because it hung in my garage all winter, but I'm shooting consistent. And so that is like a big portion of, you know, when you get a new bow or a new sight or a rest, you got to go through all the steps again. And the only thing I have to do is these little tweaks on my bow this year. And if I do decide to keep my bow for one more year after this, I'm definitely going to have to get new strings and cables because, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty hard on my equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually with that stuff, I'll just do the visual test, right? Like this year I changed my cables, but I left the same string. You know, some people say you should swap all that stuff at the same time, but
yeah,
you know, my cables were showing a lot of wear where they wrap around the cam, and I just decided I was going to replace those. And I mean, it's been working fine. But you brought up a good point too, that like, man, it's so much easier when you don't change something really big that requires a lot of setup, like a bow.
Right, right. So when it now, unlike similar to you, but this will be my first year hunting out of a saddle. Right. So it's not necessarily that I'm getting rid of any tree stands because of wear and tear and things like that, because I don't know what tree stand did you buy 17 years ago that still worked?
It was an Assault One.
Lone Wolf, right?
Lone Wolf.
Yeah. Yep. Right. So what's the new company now is Novex, pretty much the same. It's the same tree stand, and the custom gear stuff is all kind of similar. The XOP, it's all kind of, it's based off the same principles, right? So you take something like that, and it's designed for a lifetime. It's made out of metal, right? So unless you really abuse it, man, I just like you, man, I think I have one of the original Lone Wolves that I bought at a garage sale long time ago, or bought off of a buddy long time ago. That was, I don't even know. I've probably had it 15 plus years now. And so it's one of those pieces of equipment where you don't necessarily need to, but I think the big issue with guys like us is we like the new things, right? We like to spend our money on all the latest and greatest and mess around with that. Now, what about clothing, right? Because clothing for me, man, I'm rough on it. I mean, when I get holes and stuff, you know, I'll get holes. Do you ever do any patchwork on your clothes, or if it's a big tear, try to fix it, or do you just replace?
I'd say in the past, I was more likely to sew, replace, and do whatever. But I would say now I'm more likely to, if I have a major rip or tear like that, you know, either see if it's warrantied or replace it. Most often it's probably not going to be something that's covered by warranty.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about like, oh, if I want to, you know, patch this up, I got to take the sewing machine out, I got to do this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, I got 18 other things on my plate. I mean, you definitely know, having kids, that time is precious. And sometimes it's easier to just go back online and order the next thing.
That's a fact, man. That's a fact. And you made a really good point there with warranties, right? When you go to purchase any type of product, do you look for warranties that if the equipment is damaged, or the piece, you know, whatever the product is damaged, that you can have it replaced at a discount or for free?
I think for me, it's secondary to how much I like the equipment and what it's doing for me. If two pieces of gear are functionally identical and similar in price, then the warranty will probably sway me. But I'm not going to choose something that has a better warranty if I think it's maybe an inferior product or a design that I don't like as much as something else that might not have as good of a warranty.
Right. Right. So with that said, then, what are you looking for in products? Now you can go, you can get in specifics, right? When it comes, are you looking for products that are going to last or quick, but cheap? Like, how do you go into purchasing, making your purchases? What decisions do you make, or categories that you rank high or low when going into purchasing a piece of equipment?
I'd say two categories that are pretty high for me are, you know, design / functionality.
Yeah.
Is it going to do what I expect it to do and how I expect it to do it? And then number two would be kind of the build quality of it.
Yeah.
You know, is this something that's going to last? Is it something I'm fearful that it could break or, you know, might need to be replaced within the course of a year? Is it something that's going to last me a little bit? I think those two things rank pretty high. And generally, if those expectations are met, I don't really mind necessarily the buy once, cry once attitude.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel that price reflects quality in the hunting industry?
It can, but I don't think that's a blanket statement across the board. Yeah. I think some people just, you know, price it for whatever the market will bear, even if it's not a top tier product.
Yeah.
And, but I think generally speaking, stuff that is good quality tends to cost more. It's very rare that you find that item that's literally the top of the, you know, quality spectrum, but is priced half of what everything else is.
Yeah. Okay. Do you, we all have a couple of these, I think anyway, maybe you do, maybe you don't. Do you ever have, had any regrets in the past where you're like, hey, I think this is really going to do it for me, and it didn't end up functioning like you wanted it to? Or the opposite, where you're just like, oh man, I'm going to save a little money here and go with this, and then you get out there and instantly regret it?
Well, I'll tell you what, I spend way too much money on both clothing and archery stuff. Those are kind of the two categories that, from a tinkering standpoint, and just trying different things that I think might work when I'm sitting there in a tree just with hours to think on end.
Yeah.
Like I bought a pair of pants that I was going to use for late season last year, and they, instead of having a more typical type of insulation, they had like an aerogel mat, like a dense material.
Yeah.
And it ended up being much stiffer than I was anticipating. And so I couldn't really use it with knee pads. It didn't breathe at all. So it was kind of hard to use functionally. And I wore it once and I was like, yeah, I'm probably not going to wear these things again.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever give feedback to the customer on something like that, or not the customer, but the manufacturer? Do you ever go back and be like, hey man, I bought this, it didn't work for me, and here's why?
Yeah, I usually do. I mean, if it's a giant company, I might not take the time, but if it's a smaller company, especially, I'll definitely try to pass along that type of feedback.
Yeah. Yeah. So I tested out a broadhead recently that was sent to me, and I don't even know how many years now I've been using Wasp, and just awesome, like love Wasp, love everything about them and this and that. But another company sent me a set of heads, and I was actually pretty impressed with how they performed, except for one specific thing, and that was they were loud. I could hear them going, you know what I mean, down the range. Yep. And I'm like, dude, if I can hear it, then if it's on a calm day, a deer can definitely hear that. And so I took my time, and I reached out to the company, and I said, you know, hey, I shot them, and I just want to say, here's what I thought about them. I think they fly great. I think they are very field point accurate, and my only downfall is that they are loud. And I'll be honest with you, the company, they responded back to me, and they were like, thank you very much for this insight. And so they appreciated me taking my time to reach out to them. Have you ever had anything like that go wrong where they're just like, well, you're not using it right, or that doesn't happen to anybody else?
No, not typically.
Yeah.
Okay. I think more likely in that scenario, I just wouldn't get a response.
Yeah. They, I don't know, man. I, it's one of these things where I am a tinker or two in the going back to clothing. I'm a tinker or two in the clothing side of things where I've tinkered my way, not 100%, but almost out of the hunting industry. And I found other types of clothing that will do the same thing as a hunting brand. And I'm not 100% sure why I've done that. But, you know, because for the most part, some of them are dirt cheap, but they last. And some of them are about the same price as another, you know, like pants for pants or base layer for base layer than the same as a hunting brand. So, or one of the top tier hunting brands like First Light or Sitka or something like that, where I've found a similar product outside of the hunting industry for roughly the same price. And so I don't know why, but I've found myself gravitating to solid colors and found myself just tinkering my way out of the hunting space. Not to say that any of those are bad, but when it comes to any type of hunting equipment, and I know hunting specific gear, like a bow is a bow, you know, you're going to use a bow for archery, but are there any other type of products that you mess around with or look for that may not be hunting industry?
I mean, footwear definitely falls into that category to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Especially on the hiking boot side of things. I mean, obviously there's a lot of hunting boot companies, but there's a lot of other companies that just serve the hiking communities primarily, but they still function for what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Clothing is the other really good one, I think, that you mentioned.
Do you buy specifically from hunting brands?
Usually.
Yeah.
Although not always. Like, you know, you brought up the pants thing. One of my friends just was raving about these like $20 stretch nylon pants from Walmart. I think Wrangler made them.
Yeah.
And I went and picked up a pair and initially I was like, man, these things are awesome. It's like the same as, you know, a $80-$100 pair of hunting company pants. They were like tan in color. And then the first time I walked through Breyers with them, they were about shredded into a million pieces.
And that's why they're 20 bucks. Oh man. Yeah. I've had my fair share of, you know, that bagger's lice stuff, right? That just sticks to absolutely everything. And so my main hunting pant in Iowa or the Midwest that has all that early season, well, it's shit, that bagger lice, that's all year round if you walk through it. But I've noticed that there's certain types of like really thick denim that it doesn't necessarily stick to a lot. And if it does stick to it, it comes off real easy. Now you take a pair of, I don't know, anything fleece, you can't use again, right? I mean, it just sticks to it like crazy. But I found that really thick denim. Now it has zero, I don't know what you would, any type of body temperature regulation, right? You would have to wear a base layer underneath that to do that. But just from a walking through thorns and a bagger's lice and just beating the crap out of my equipment, that performs way better than anything else. Because I've bought a pair of those high dollar, really breathable pants. I've got a hole in it on day one of using it. I think I caught it on one of my steps as I was coming down out of the tree. Mm-hmm. And those things only flex for so long until they actually tear. And so I got a little tear in it. And eventually throughout the year, the tear got bigger because I never fixed it. And so I was just like, man, my other stuff, it doesn't breathe as well, but I can wear a base layer to kind of solve that problem, but it's extremely durable. And so that's another reason why I've kind of weaseled my way out of those, because you know most of the hunting brands, they really don't have any like, here's a denim pair of work pants.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the closest things you get are like the, you know, some companies make like those traps.
Oh yeah.
Nylon traps.
Yeah.
Those are kind of similar, you know? And I think some brands make more like pheasant hunting, like brush busting style of pants.
Yeah.
Which works for there too. The only downside, of course, is that they have that more, a little bit more of a swishing noise, or if you, you know, brush against something, you're going to hear it a little bit more, which obviously early season, that's doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mid season might be a little bit different story, but.
Right. So when it comes to, let's see here now, are you strictly out of a saddle right now?
Either that or on the ground.
Or on the ground. Yeah, that's right. You're a ground guy. So let's talk about saddles, right? For a while. How long have you been using a saddle?
Oh boy. Gotta be, that's a check, but it's gotta be like 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And well, if you include the old Lone Wolf, Assassin platform that they came out with like 15 years ago, then much longer.
Okay.
It's kind of saddle-esque, right?
Right. So you're wearing your regular safety harness, but you're just standing the whole time.
Right.
Right. Okay. So have you noticed, cause I'm getting ready to get into the saddle game pretty heavy this year. Have you noticed any type of wear and tear on a saddle that, you know, because unlike a bow, something can be wear and tear and you're not going to fall out of the tree if it fails, right? So, you know, ropes and things like that. Have you noticed any wear and tear on ropes or what maybe a saddle hunter needs to keep an eye out for on items that do wear and tear and how often those should be replaced?
Yeah, I would say that typically I don't notice a bunch of extreme wear on the stuff that's really important. But I do notice occasionally some wear, especially for certain items that maybe aren't being used like totally to the best of their abilities. A good example would be for guys using like a Ropeman 2 for their ascender. If you're using that and you're not opening the cam up all the way, when you go to let rope out, it'll grab and usually start to pull away at the sheath of the rope a little bit, and it'll get kind of kind of pilled up looking.
Yeah.
If you walk through, again, like the Breyer example, if you have a saddle that has mesh on it and you're doing a lot of sidestepping, or if you have like the any kind of superficial straps, usually the nylon straps that make up the bulk of the actual part of the saddle that's weight bearing, seem to be pretty good against the abrasion. But if you have some other kind of webbing that's a little bit softer, because even like within nylons, you get like some really stiff webbing or some really soft webbing. And I've noticed before that the thorns on, you know, the berries or the briars, whatever, they can start to make that look kind of pilled up too.
Right.
But typically, I haven't really noticed it on things like Amsteel or the, you know, the primary seatbelt webbing or nylon webbing.
Yeah.
That is most important.
Yeah. And that stuff is, I mean, the design of that stuff is meant to last like a very long time. Like those ropes are ultra, if I had to guess anyway, I mean, you probably have more experience with that than me, but I'm pretty sure those are designed to last a very long time.
Yeah. Especially some of the smaller diameter, well, I guess all of them, right? The bigger ropes are kind of modeled off of what is used in the tree industry. And then the smaller ropes, some of them are tree industry, some of them are other industries, but in order to get similar strengths, those smaller ropes, they end up using higher strength materials, and even the sheath might be, you know, higher temperature rating, something to that effect. So yeah, usually if it's made its way onto a, you know, well-respected saddle company, it's probably pretty high quality stuff.
Yeah, that's a fact. Let's ask you another like very general question. What should people be looking for when determining what is, I don't know, high quality versus low quality?
I think one of the, I'll start with the saddle, you know, realm first to kind of start with, but it can be kind of tough. I think generally speaking, you can look at things like stitch quality as an indication of what kind of attention to detail does a company have. If it's a smaller company, or if it's a bigger company, what kind of quality control do they have in terms of mass production? Sometimes, you know, you can make 100 of something really good, but you go up to 10,000, you start to see issues. Stitch quality would just be one example, just like clothing, right? You get cheap clothing and sometimes the stitching doesn't hold up that great, or you see missed stitches, or, loose threads hanging out. So that'd be one thing to look at. But apart from that, it can be really tough to tell just because there is just in general not a whole lot going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so many pieces of webbing and so much mesh and nylon or polyester and those type of things. But, I mean, I guess that's just one example within, like, the saddle itself.
Yeah.
But if you have any other examples, I could probably dive into those too.
Yeah. I come back to this all the time. I think marketing can make a product seem higher quality than what it really is too. I don't know why, but I take broadheads, for example, and maybe even archery equipment, for example, bows, for example. I think there's companies out there that throw a lot of money into the marketing of a product. And I think guys, any serious, let's just say bow hunter, will find out that, hey man, you know, I've been duped. I got sold on the marketing aspect, and these products didn't necessarily perform like I thought they were going to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely true. And I guess one thing that kind of counters the point I made earlier, sometimes there's a difference between sort of an aesthetic quality and a functional quality.
Yeah.
You might get a brand new backpack and it's like, man, this thing looks really nice. And then use it for a season and it's like, it didn't work that great.
Yeah.
Or you might get a pack that just seems like it's a little rough around the edges, but like, man, they got pockets in the right spots, the zipper works, and I ended up liking it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
I feel comfortable wearing it, that kind of stuff.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that has a lot to do, how do I put this? How do I say this? There is the... I won't say it because I just kind of brain farted. I had it right there, but then I lost it anyway. When it comes to, I don't know, going back to dirt, like the durability of things. Do you think there is ever a time where functionality and durability kind of are at odds with each other? Like, dude, the functionality of this is awesome, but this means the durability for a certain product is lower.
Oh yeah, definitely. Anything in the ultra lightweight realm is usually going to fall in that quantity or that
great
category
point.
Where, you know, durability is kind of a trade-off against whatever, I guess, functionality you're getting from the lightweight aspect of that gear, whether it's a tent, a sleeping bag, or whatever. And obviously anything in the hunting industry, but I think the other one that kind of falls into that category for me would be clothing.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to have an ultralight, like summer base layer, it's probably going to be some kind of a, you know, stretchy polyester with some spandex in it or something of that effect. Something that if it was more durable, I would roast. So I'm going to wear something that's more breathable. And that just by its very nature means it's not going to hold up very well.
Right. Right. Yeah, and I think at the birth of some of these ultralight, I think some of them have figured it out now. For example, First Light. Okay, so First Light back in the day, there was always these questions about how durable their products were. But I think they fixed that now. But back in the day, I think a lot of companies were having that struggle where they're trying to find the lightweight, the breathable, and the durability. And it was almost like a teeter totter. It wasn't breathable and it was too durable, or it wasn't durable enough, but it felt great on your body.
Right. Yeah. Well, even with, I think with First Light, you know, a good example on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So I think they were one of those companies that have like a brush busting style of pant.
Yeah.
And on the other end of the spectrum, they have the Merino. I think they were called the Obsidian pants. Maybe they still have a version of that now, but you know, totally opposite end of the spectrum. And the Merino based pants, even though they're ripstop, didn't have the same level of durability, but they offered other benefits that came at the cost of durability.
Right. Right. And that's one thing that I don't know. I don't know about you. Let me ask you this question. When it comes to being uncomfortable but making sure your product that your whatever product works properly. Are you willing to sacrifice any type of comfort for the best functionality? Like as far as maybe add durability into that?
I'd say I'm probably more likely to compromise on durability than I would comfort, depending on what it is.
Gotcha.
At least from the standpoint of comfort in a tree, whether it's, you know, me being cold and that discomfort's going to cause me to kind of, you know, tuck my head into my collar and just stare straight forward and can't wait for the day to be done.
Yeah.
Like that's obviously miserable. I'd rather gain that comfort back at the expense of maybe something else.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just from like, even like just sitting there, like yeah. saddle, knee pads, platform standpoint, like yeah. I'd rather carry perhaps a little bit more weight. I guess durability doesn't really, I guess, factor into that one as much, but I'd rather be comfortable in that scenario because I know I'm going to be less fidgety. Less fidgety means I'm less likely to get picked off.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one thing that I've kind of learned over the years, especially hunting in cold weather, where it's like, I really don't care. I'm not even thinking about durability at that point. I'm thinking about staying as warm as possible in a comfortable setting so that if something does go down, I'm ready for it, right? And not,
yep.
I mean, yep. That's even hard in like negative 15 degree weather. I remember a couple of years ago, we had a really cold rut in Iowa. And I think there was like 3 or 4 days in a row where it got down to like, I want to say like negative 20 as I'm walking into the stand. And it was the high was like negative one for the day. And so I'm sitting there on these morning hunts and I'm just like, can't control myself. So I just went with whatever was going to keep me warm. And that was like two pairs of overalls and just, you know, like not even thinking about proper layering. I was just like, I got to get something on me that's going to keep me warm. So you're the DIY guy. So can you provide us with any examples of some maybe simple DIY tips or tricks that might extend the life of certain products or keep you from having to, you know, cycle through certain products every year or every other year?
Yeah, for clothing, trying to find, a used sewing machine or something that's maybe entry level and learning how to sew. There's a gazillion videos on YouTube on how to do it and how to fix certain things and how to add pockets to stuff. I mean, that's a great one because then you don't have to find somebody to do it for you and you don't have to fork out, you know, $200 to go replace whatever was broken.
Right.
Archery, you know, getting a bow press and figuring out how to do your own stuff, even if it's just like a portable bow press. I mean, for as infrequently as you have to use a bow press to fix something, usually a portable bow press is just fine. It'll fit in your workbench or whatever, versus having like a full bench top, like ultra DIY setup for doing your own bow work.
Yeah.
So those things would definitely be like really like low level stuff that you can do. The information's out there. It's easy to learn how to do it. You're likely going to be able to find somebody who has done it before to be able to bounce questions off of them. And both of those can save you quite a bit of money.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. Well, Garrett, man, thanks for this quick talk today. Really appreciate your insight. Everybody who's listening right now needs to go check out the DIY Sportsman podcast on the Sportsman's Empire Network. And Garrett, man, hopefully I'm going to get you on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast here pretty soon and we can chat about your upcoming season. And if I don't talk to you before that, good luck this upcoming season, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck to you too.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.